We are back. It's Lions Collective. We're live every single Wednesday on the Lions Collective YouTube channel, which you should be subscribed to. Like the stream. We got a lot to get to. Jack Campbell extension. OTAs are among us.
Hey.
I wish people could see sometimes what happens before these shows, like the couple minutes leading up until we go live. I think that's the content people really need, if I'm being honest.
I feel like we're going to have all kinds of crazy technical difficulties today. I don't know what it is. You're broadcasting live from the weekend set at the Super Bowl a few years back. But you sound great. You sound great. Colton's not here. It's causing all kinds of weird problems with the shifting boxes. I'm very confident.
I think we need Colton to call in with drink number probably 17 of today in his hand from his bachelor party in New Orleans, which apparently is a week-long bachelor party. Whoever heard of such a thing? I got to make some new friends, dude.
What do you think his EPA is, drinks per hour?
Oh, this is a great question.
1.17, I heard.
By the way, when you guys were just watching me work backstage, as I had forgotten that I was backstage, I was looking up the Wikipedia profile of one distinguished Chris Hubbard, who I had forgotten started in week 18 last year in Chicago. So that's where I'm at in my day.
Ben and I gave him a nickname last year. I'm not a nickname guy, but like at some point, like when he got there, you know, the new signings that don't really have a place on the roster get put in like the land of misfit players over in the corner of the locker room. And I was like, who's that professor looking dude over in the corner? he looked like a substitute science teacher.
Yeah.
So he just became the professor.
The black Jake Slaughter.
Jake Slaughter also looked like a professor. That's for sure.
Seeing Jake Slaughter, he looks like he's 35 and he has already like a 401k set up for him, all ready to go. I mean, he is
Chris Hubbard is actually 35. How old is he, Quill? 34?
I already got off his Wikipedia page. It was 1 minute was 1 minute too long. He's 35.
There you go. No, it should be a good show. Shout out to Colton. That guy, I mean, he's a grinder, man. He didn't miss the show when he was in Austin. And, you know, it's a fair reason. He's out this week. We'll have him back. We got to get into the Jack Campbell extension because some of the numbers came out. So now we have you guys that can help kind of break it down. You also got a chance to speak to Jack Campbell. He spoke to the media. Very Jack Campbell-esque press conference, might I add. It's amazing. I don't know. I think people know who Jack is, but hearing him speak, talk about the highest paid narrative, it just fits Jack, his DNA so well. So what was your guys' reaction? That contract finally getting it done. I do also want to say, give credit to the show, because you guys were on it. You guys, I mean, we talked about it for a while now that you thought this Jack contract would get wrapped up pretty quickly, assuming who Jack is on top of the fact they love him so much. Not that they don't love the other players, but Jack is such an easy dude. You probably just send him a contract, he signs it. But what'd you guys think of the initial contract?
You know, I thought Dave Burkett brought up a really great, analogy, reference, whatever today with Tyler Linderbaum. You know, this the guy that also had his fifth year option declined by his club for very similar reasons, right? Like the fifth year option for him was all offensive linemen. So you get these offensive tackles swaying the numbers. We talked about Jack Campbell. The fifth year option was swayed by some of the elite edge rushers that are classified by the league as linebackers. And so the Micah Parsons of the world are swaying that figure and kind of ballooning it up where the Lions felt like they had to decline it. And what's interesting is Jack could have played hardball and people say, oh, well, they got the franchise tag. Guess what? The franchise tag also factors in those guys. So it's even more money than the fifth year option. I think it was like $21 million to $28 million. So, it felt at some level risky that the Lions let it go because Linderbaum was able to get to the open market and not just cash in, but become the highest paid center by a wide margin. I think it was like 30% more than any center had ever been paid by average annual value. And so,
and Jack, just to interject briefly, as Jack said today, he was like, Tyler did what he did, which was Jack's way of saying he got his bag.
Yeah. And he was happy for him, right? Yes. Like they're friends. But Jack also said like, that's not the path I wanted to go down. You know, being a Lion was important to me. Being the highest paid player in the history of my position was not as important to me. Like as long as I'm paid in that elite tier, which, you know, fits the Roquan Smiths, the Fred Warners of the world, like I'm good. And so I had projected Campbell with the idea that he had all this leverage in his hand, you know, to get $22 million per year. I think 62 guaranteed was kind of where I fell. And it's not like he took a pauper's deal. I mean, he still got $1 million with $50 million guaranteed, but like, there's just so many factors within the structure of this contract. Remember, Carlton Davis left Detroit in part because he didn't like the way they structured the deal with guarantees, with void years. And Jack's like, I trust you. You trust me. You know, get me in that market value range and let's go. And, you know, I think that is what is going to endear him to a fan base that I think already clearly loves him.
Yeah, dude, it was the most Jack Campbell press conference before it even began. Like from the moment he walked into the media room wearing a black cutoff t-shirt, fresh off the practice field at OTAs, to when he plopped his black cleats down on a little table like next to the microphone and then walked to the stage in a white pair of socks. It's just peak Jack Campbell. He doesn't care what anyone thinks about him. And he's just gonna be authentically himself. And then he got up here for 20 minutes and kind of delivered a deadpan comedy stand-up routine. Like he was
it's pretty really good,
engaging, entertaining, and in a funny way throughout, but also very sincere. I he said basically he had two overarching goals when he entered the NFL, and one was to secure sort of generational wealth for his family, and he understood that no matter what number his contract ended in here, he was going to achieve that first goal, whether it ended in a one, a two, a three, or a five. Like $20 million and upward is enough to set up your family for generations to come. So that was one goal satisfied. And his other goal that is yet to be satisfied is to win a championship in Detroit. And he knew that he could help the team do that. He could increase his odds of achieving that goal if he took a little bit less than he was worth or would be worth on the open market in the name of helping his team extend his three draft classmates, Jahmyr Gibbs, Brian Branch, and Sam Laporta. And I want to echo Justin. Like, let's not make it out that Jack Campbell saved the Lions $5, $10 million per year. Like, he still got a substantial payday here. But over the life of the contract, if you assume that Campbell could have commanded at least 22, probably closer to 25 on the open market next season, based on the fact that he's 25 years old and the fact that Fred Warner is making 21 per year through his age 33 season, then Campbell might well have saved the Lions $2 to $3 million per year. And over the life of the contract, that might be an extra $9, $10 million, and the Lions can take those savings and spend them on an extension for Laporta or Branch or Gibbs. So the Gibbs one's going to get done regardless. But, yeah, like the money that they have sort of discovered in their pockets here based on Campbell's willingness to get a deal done without any sort of hassle could be the difference between extending a player like Branch or Laporta who might have otherwise been left out by the math. So – a lot of players talk about, you know, wanting to do right by their teams, but like Jack Campbell seriously did here.
Oh, Justin, your mic's muted.
Yeah, we lost you for a sec, Justin.
No.
All right, I'm back.
Well, there you go.
There he is.
You're back.
I think the cat is slowly working its way through chewing through yet another cord in my house is getting very frustrating, but I know the contract numbers can get a little boring for people, so I won't belabor the point too much. But as I mentioned, with the fifth year option, Campbell or the Lions would have been on the hook for $21 million, and it was never going to come to that. But you know, just to understand like what that figure was, now his 2027 cap hit is $5.5 million. It's effectively $16 million more that they have to spend now. If you want to start calling these things windows, that's fine. 2028, it's under 10. It's closer to $9 million. So 2 years down the road, it's still half of what it would have been for the fifth-year option. And it's not until 2029 where it kind of balloons a little bit, jumps up to about $24 million. Honestly, if he's still playing at an all-pro level, we're probably going to look at that amount and go, it's fair and reasonable. And that's the year kind of where Goff, St. Brown's contracts are off the books. Their current contracts are off the books. And if they're extended, you're going to see their first year numbers low at that point. So it's going to really mesh well. And so, like I said, Campbell put a lot of trust in the Lions to structure this in a way that helps the team. And I think you can see that. And then with the void years, you know, all that does is gives you opportunity to kind of push cap space in the future. That can be very punishing if a player just plays out his contract or is cut and all that money comes due. But the way I see it, I think Jack Campbell is a Lion for life. And obviously we can't predict injuries in this game, but I think this is not the last contract Jack Campbell signs with the Lions. When he signs that next one, all those void years, they become real years, and that money stays kind of spread out. And so it's just a really, really smart contract for the Lions. And, you know, I think it's going to be beneficial to keeping Campbell here for, I would say, the entirety of his career.
Which is exactly what they envisioned when they drafted him. I'll never forget Campbell on the night of that draft. I believe it was Campbell saying, like, you know, we think this is a guy that can be the leader, the anchor of our defense for the next 10 years. And that's not a comment that Campbell would make lightly. Like he knows how challenging it is for any player, especially like an off-ball middle linebacker to last with one team for that long in the NFL. But that was the vision, and it's beginning to come to life here.
We did mention his personality, right? Like I think it was a good reflection of why we gave Jack Campbell the Good Guy Award last mm-hmm. year. And that's a award that's handed out by the Writers Association of every city to every team, the player that I think it's described as best helps the media to do their job, right? Answers questions directly, is informative, engaging, interesting, maybe an upset, I think, from what we thought Jack Campbell would be, kind of this gruff, no-nonsense personality from the day he walked in the door, right? Might have got more interesting answers about trout fishing than scheme, but I don't know if there's a player that I found more helpful to my job last year. And to go back to the same thing I said about Tyler Linderbaum, I think it was by a wide margin, Jack Campbell was the good guy for us last year.
Before we, I want to ask you guys about the other players that could get extended before we kind of move on, talk more OTAs. But before we do that, we got to tell you about our friends over at SeatGeek. Use that code COLLECTIVE10. You get 10% off your tickets on SeatGeek. But, and Jeff's going to tell you from a different location about our friends over at SeatGeek. I've interrupted the video to tell you about a proud sponsor of Lions Collective, and that is SeatGeek. And for me, I like country, and I want to go see Morgan Wallen this summer in Ann Arbor at the Big House. And I got to get out of the house. I need something to do. So I go to SeatGeek. It's got the best deals. And I've been looking for an app to find the best deals. And SeatGeek does exactly that. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, etc. And it's very easy to use. SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale from 1 to 10, so you know what you're getting. And you just look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. So use the code COLLECTIVE10 to get 10% off any tickets you so choose. Big shout out to SeatGeek. Now let's get back to the show.
Hey, use Jeff, you know 10% off of, you know, 10% off of $8 to get into a Tigers game costs? Get in for like $7.20 right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Tigers, that's a whole different thing. You know what? This is why this is a football town. And, you know, talking sports and you guys, all of us kind of working in different spaces in the industry, no matter what time of the year it is, people depend on the Tigers this time of year, and they always get upset by it. At least this year specifically. Someone commented today, Tigers just need to get us to football season. Just get us to football season. They can't even do that. So let's talk about football season. You got Jahmyr Gibbs, which I know Adam Schefter actually put out, which it's not like a, you know, it's not some breaking news that Jahmyr Gibbs is expected to get be next in line for that contract, which I would assume lines up that way. But in your guys' opinion, I know we had a chance to speak to Brad Holmes, and he spoke about some of those other guys and the timelines. And I know he feels really good about Brian Branch, Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, but have you guys changed your timeline at all for any of those other players getting contracts done? And do you think Jahmyr Gibbs could be next very quickly or in the near future?
Good, Will.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jahmyr Gibbs is definitely next. And I don't want to speak for Jahmyr Gibbs, but that's a player who probably would value the sort of titular fame that comes with being the highest paid player at your position, even if it's only temporary. And this may partly depend on when Bijan Robinson signs his next deal. But that's probably a tad more complicated deal to work out than the one that got done with Jack Campbell. And then I still think that they would prefer to see Laporta and Branch play this season, at least for a month or so, before getting those deals done. I'm of the belief that it's worth paying the certainty tax that comes with seeing them perform in full health for a team that is obviously up against the cap. Like, the Lions can't really afford to miss on one of these forthcoming extensions. And one way they could assure themselves that they don't is just to see those guys play in September, October, and to know that they're back to full health and they can count on those guys being the difference makers they have been pre-injury for their first 2.5 seasons.
Gibbs's contract discussions are interesting because the Lions did exercise his fifth-year option, and we talk in these millions of dollar numbers like they're nothing. They're nothing to the team, I guess, but $14.3 million is reasonable, I guess, for his talent. It's something you could live with if you have to go into that season with that number. And so the team does carry a little bit of leverage in this situation. But as we just talked about, Jack, right? Like, the difference between the fifth-year option and the real number that he ended up with, the real cap number he ended up with extension, the difference was $16 million, right? The Lions can significantly lower that $14 million number with an extension, even if that extension averages $18 million or $20 million, you know, more of that Saquon Barkley range. And so, you know, I don't view Jahmyr Gibbs just as a running back. I know the Detroit Lions do not view him just as a running back. You know, he's more in that offensive weapon, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, not quite as good of a receiver at this stage of his career, maybe not ever, but just such a dynamic player. Every time the ball's in his hands, high usage rate, high durability, low injury, not risk, but rate. And so I do anticipate it getting done first, just because, you know, he's the healthy of the three. I think Laporta probably gets done after that. And I think I've comped this before on this podcast, but I think Decker's a really good example, right? Like, he was coming into camp before his extension a few years back, where coming off of an injury, and Lions like, hey, we just want to see you go through a padded practice or two. And I think it was the very first padded practice. Like, he finished it, and the next day they signed him. And so I could see Laporta getting done in training camp. Branch, I'm waiting for Branch. If I'm Brett Holmes, I know he said he's not going to, but I definitely want to see a player coming back from Achilles. And I think it behooves Branch, because you're going to have to, at some level, take a discount if you haven't proven yourself coming back on the field.
Let's talk about OTAs. So you got new faces, you got the O-line. I know it's tough until they put really pads on, but there still are competition. There's a bunch of competition in the offseason, and I think OTAs is people are still starving to see anything that OTAs is exciting for people like me to talk about and you guys. So what are some things maybe you guys are looking forward to seeing, or maybe questions that you're looking forward to get answered, storylines that you're interested in seeing play out? Just with OTAs kind of arriving here, starting actually, what, today is the first day of OTAs.
Correct.
What are you guys looking forward to?
You know, I think we'll get into Kirby Joseph's status here in a little bit, and it's something we're looking for. But I don't really anticipate him being out here at this stage in the offseason. So my eyes are really going to kind of be glued to the defensive backfield and kind of how the depth chart is envisioned. Clearly, we're not, you know, I don't want to use the term shaking out, right? Because that's right. What the next few months, including training camp, are for, is to kind of figure out who fits best. But maybe that initial vision, right? Where's Christian Izzian fit into this package? Or Chuck Clark or Avante Maddox or Thomas Harper? It's that safety position that's really, really interesting to me. I think Izzian and Clark are more branch mold safeties. I think Maddox and Harper are more of the free safety type. But where do the Lions initially view kind of how that depth chart is going to shake out behind the starters if, you know, whatever availability they don't have to begin the season?
Jeff, go ahead. Is there anything that's top of mind for you?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for me. I mean, nickel to kind of go into the secondary. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens at that nickel position. The biggest thing I'm excited for just in the offseason, I know it's hard with no pads. I got to get an answer to the left guard question. I mean, that's what I'm most excited for. I know we've talked a lot about it on this show, but just the amount of guys that are going to be there in that left guard spot competing, that's probably one of the bigger storylines I'm excited to see is who wins the spot. Is it Mahogany retaining it, or is it somebody that maybe we didn't talk enough about winning the job? So for me, the big storyline, offensive line, of course, but the left guard spot, I'm looking forward to seeing play out.
Yeah, I think the linebacker rotation around Jack Campbell bears some watching, and like we're only going to glean so much from OTA sessions. But you know, you could obviously can plug Jack in there at middle linebacker, and then you know, like how are they going to use Derek Barnes around him in a defense that no longer has Alex Anzalone playing the will, and how are they going to rotate Malcolm Rodriguez and Jimmy Rolder, who to us anyway seem to have pretty redundant skill sets, and are they going to begin to form a defense, as we all expect, that doesn't deploy so much base, that is a little bit more flexible. Like we heard Dan at the owners' meetings talk about building out this defense with three packages that will allow this unit to be more flexible, more adaptable over the course of a game. And to me, that starts with the linebackers, especially when your D coordinator was a linebacker and sort of builds his defense through those guys. So like what does it begin to look like around Jack Campbell? Is Derek Barnes in their mind still sort of a pass rushing Sam, because the pass rushing ability hasn't always popped for him? And is Malcolm Rodriguez and or Jimmy Rolder playing the role that Anzalone played last year, or more likely are they playing in sort of a more specialized role? So I think just watching some of the linebacker deployment, even though it's May 27th, might give us some sort of a window into how this defense looks different this year than last year.
I think back to 24, Will, like we really early in the offseason program, we just saw Derek Barnes so much more on the line of scrimmage than he had been his first two seasons. And it's like, what is this? Right. And We're now 2 years into that. And obviously 24 was wiped out mostly by injury there. But even last year, like he was talking about playing more off ball. That's where Shep wanted him. And then you look at the numbers at the end of the season, and I don't have the exact ratios in front of me, but I believe it was like 450 snaps on the line of scrimmage and like 350 off ball. And so, you know, with the departure of Anzalone, somebody's got to be playing off ball. I think Barnes is your best answer, more so than plugging Malcolm Rodriguez. Like I've talked about this before. I don't think Jimmy Rolder is going to be ready out the gate. Right. I think there's too much to clean up with some of his zone coverage stuff that I'm not ready to throw the rookie into the fire, but I kind of like the idea of playing Barnes off the ball. I think he's a much better pass rusher as a blitzer. He's kind of got that athleticism and the ability to navigate gaps really well. I think he plays the run and the screen passes downhill as many quality linebackers do. And obviously I don't feel like they have a coverage solution to replace Anzalone, right? Like that's something we've discussed, but if you just give me like the on paper skill set and the schematic knowledge, like, If I'm making an upside bet, it's Barnes, right? Like, I think he's got the sideline to sideline speed. He can cover zones. It's going to be more about awareness. And so maybe the more reps you can get him here in these OTAs and these 7-on-7s in training camp, maybe by the time you get to the season, like, it's not going to be perfect. But I do think that maybe he's their best bet.
Yeah, I think that Calvin Shepard changing defensive schematics conversation, or if they roll to more nickel packages or 4-2-5, get away from the base defense thing, is probably one of the things I hear the most. Because you guys had a chance to speak. I mean, you spoke to Calvin at the combine. He talked about his scheme, and I know the comment was brought up, well, if I had a Nick Amonawori, we'd be running a little different scheme here. But it seems like they have so many guys that are capable of playing nickel. I mean, Izzy, and like we brought up, obviously Roger McCreary, who was brought in, Keith Abney, who's a capable nickel, that it's hard not to. We just talked about this linebacker core. The only thing that's popping in my head is, oh my goodness, they can't run. I mean, you can't have three linebackers out there. But then to your point, is Derek Barnes fit to do what Anzalone can do? That's the other problem. So Calvin Shepard, that scheme is also kind of a side part of this whole OTAs thing. I know you're not going to see it yet, but whole offseason, I'll say. See what happens there.
Kind of like how they're going to look against maybe some of these mobile quarterbacks, though, with these linebackers. Like Rolder's extremely athletic. I think Nowoski was kind of finding a groove in that spiral. Barnes, is kind of a hunt-and-seek linebacker. And so, I think they're more equipped than ever to kind of handle some of these mobile quarterbacks. And obviously, we saw a wonderful execution of that game plan against Baltimore in that primetime matchup last year. Another thing I'm super interested in is kind of the Lions are trying this maybe grand experiment is hyperbole, but they scrapped the rookie minicamp this year. And, you know, that kind of raised a lot of eyebrows. But the more I've thought about it, like I understand the logic, right? Like people take for granted the grind rookies go through. They finish up their senior season and then immediately roll into this like hyper-focused pre-draft performance training where they're cutting weight and grinding through 40s and three cone drills and vertical jumps. And, you know, it's just a grind being in the gym every day, sometimes twice a day, getting these metrics perfect as your job interview. And then immediately after the draft, you're right into your first NFL offseason. And so you hear about rookie walls, and I think it's just a major part of it, right? Tate Ratledge hit his rookie wall last year and was kind of honest about it at that Philadelphia game and had to get through the mental hurdle. And so I think the Lions are taking an interesting proactive approach here, even if it's just a couple weeks to kind of shut down the mind, shut down the body, let these guys recharge a little bit so that once November rolls around, like you're still getting peak perform or closer to peak performance from these guys as opposed to dead legs and dead minds.
Yeah. And then offensively, we are watching a unit with a brand new coordinator and a brand new play caller. And, you know, I know a lot of the attention when they hired Petsing was paid to all of the 12 and 13 personnel they use in Arizona. And Campbell kind of quieted some of that talk by saying that was more out of necessity based on injuries than, you know, a part of Petsing's offensive philosophy. But like they've got a pretty deep tight ends room here. And I know Sam is still working his way back from the back surgery, but not like they signed Conklin, who has been a very accomplished pass catching tight end in this league. Obviously they bring back Brock Wright and they bring back Laporta. And so like early on, are there going to be examples of the Lions leaning into some of that heavier personnel? And that's also been something Campbell has shown an inclination for over his first couple of years here. Like, let's not forget, they matched that 49ers offer sheet to Brock Wright because they valued him so much as, you know, a number two tight end who can add some level of versatility to the offense. Now, J-Raj might he might differ with their valuation of Brock Wright. But the point is, Campbell, I think, has always envisioned playing sort of heavy big boy football as part of establishing that downhill demeanor that he's hoping Petsing brings with him from Arizona. So, you know, when we watch them through OTAs, do we see that the beginning of that start to form as Campbell and Petsing together sort of shape this offense in the identity that the Lions had first established in like 22, 23, 24? And is that built around more tight ends on the field together than we saw at times last year?
You know what I need to see, Will? It's time. It's time to get the Aleem McNeil fullback wrap.
Yes!
I've been pining for it since 21. It's time.
If not that, maybe he's their coverage linebacker. Let him rip, man. He was an All-American linebacker way back in high school.
Yeah, get him in the Tigers lineup while we're at it.
Hey, that's like they keep drafting those prototypes. Gil Howard, I think he was a linebacker as well. Just big fellas who can fly around. I mean, might be onto some, Will. I don't hate it. Why not? Change the scheme. Make guys play different positions.
That's right. Maybe Hutch is their A-gapper this year. Just let him get in there and anchor.
Could you imagine the look in the center's eyes? What?
Yeah, before we move on, I do want to get to the injuries to kind of close out the show here. But before we do that, we got to tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. So allow me to do that. Oh, let me get this. Okay, that doesn't fit, but we'll figure it out. Wait, is it this? Nope. Okay, we're going back to the old one. All right, bear with me. We're going to figure it out. All right, let me share my screen.
This is OTA for 2026 Lions Collective.
Lions Collective.
Phase one, man. We're working through it.
We're in OTAs as well, so forgive us. But here's the prize picks for today, which, by the way, play $5, get $50 instantly. Use that code HMA when you're placing your lineups. Speaking of Jahmyr Gibbs, we got more on Jahmyr Gibbs in the rushing line, basically 1,200 rushing yards, which we think as an RB1, getting all those carries, he can do that. He did it this year. And then Jared Goff, over 3,900 passing yards. I mean, the guy's not Kyler Murray. He's not Jalen Hurts. He's going to get 4,000 freaking passing yards. So, and then I got Ashton Jeanty also over on the rushing yards. So those are the picks. You can tail them. You use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly. Big shout out to our friends over at Prize Picks. Now, to continue the show, we got to get into some other players' injury stuff. I know you mentioned Laporta. Someone in the chat actually asked, was he supposed to be back by OTA? You know, there's some questions about that. Brian Branch, the Achilles, you got Kirby. What's going on there? I know you said, Justin, you don't really expect him to participate, but what are some guys injury-wise? Aleem McNeil, I know he's ACL last year, but just guys that dealt with injuries coming into this year.
I would not be surprised. I tried to find a photo gallery before we went on the air. The Lions hadn't posted one. Sometimes you kind of just scan through that and see who's doing what. But Laporta was out there catching some balls against air last week. And so, you know, this is a no live contact segment of the offseason. Obviously, there's some incidental contact. But I think Laporta was fairly close by the end of last season. You know, a discectomy, just kind of the timeline of the recovery for that. Usually he was trying to be aggressive in coming back, and maybe, you know, had they been in the playoff hunt, maybe, but I would say he was probably 2 to 4 weeks away. So if he's out there, it wouldn't surprise me. It also wouldn't surprise me if he's not, because the Lions are historically cautious with recovery. He's obviously got the contract situation hanging over his head that, you know, maybe he wants to be cautious, but I'm sure he's in the building because that's just the type of guys that Iowa breeds.
Studs. Nothing but studs.
Yeah. Yeah, the injury stuff is interesting here. I know people were commenting in the chat. I want to get to someone. What was the comment in there? It was earlier in the show. It's okay. Well, Steve, you got your comment answered. We'll get out of here for today. And
O-line. I feel like O-line is probably the main point of focus offensively.
How about this? I'll do you one better. O-line.
Yeah, do you one better.
Dog and pony pick of the week. Left guard spot when you talk about the O-line. Let's get into it. Dog and pony, shout out. Let's get into it.
Well, and hey, while we're talking dog and pony, do not forget that next week they begin their celebration of their 5 years in operation. To Monday through Friday, 5 day long party down at Dog and Pony Show. They're releasing a new beer each week, so get down there and enjoy. Say what's up to Kyle. Mention us for your dollar off your beer. But you know what the Lions have done that has maybe flown a little bit under the radar this offseason, maybe post draft, is just like really fortify the size and like just imposing nature of the interior offensive line depth. And this is actually why I ended up looking at Chris Hubbard's Wikipedia page before the show began. It felt like to me that like most of their reserves on the interior last year were smaller than the Lions typically value, like from Tristan Colon to Kingsley Aguakin to indeed Chris Hubbard. Like most of their interior reserves were on the slighter side for offensive linemen. And that looks a lot different now. Like you're talking about Miles Frazier as a potential reserve, 6'6", 6'7". They're bringing Ben Barge as a potential reserve, 6'6", 6'7". I know Drew Scruggs on the smaller side, but he probably profiles as more of a center than a guard. So that left guard spot is definitely up for grabs. And honestly, Mahogany would end up on the smaller end of that spectrum. And the Lions traditionally have really place a premium on those bigger sized offensive linemen. So Mahogany has work to do. I would fully assume that the opening rotation has him penciled in there at starting guard opposite Tate, but there's a job to be won for Mahogany. And there's definitely bigger competition in every sense of the word this year than there was last year.
The Lions, I feel like, very intentionally brought in capable competition for that job. And it starts for me with Ben Barch. You know, that is who I expect to kind of get those primary second team reps here early in the offseason. Obviously, Juice Scruggs is there as well. I genuinely have no idea where Miles Frazier is going to be lining up, and it's one of the things I'm, you know, kind of going to be keyed into when we're out there on Friday watching practice, because I don't know whether he's viewed as guard or tackle or just a hodgepodge of all of it. But what we've seen in the past in camps is when there's a pretty solid reserve, they start sprinkling in with the first team. You know, how do you handle it? And if nothing else, you're like, you're prepping that guy for chemistry if he needs to come into a game. But how early will we see Ben Bartsch first team reps? Like, how aggressively are they going to be pushing Mahogany through this offseason? I ultimately feel like he's going to emerge. I think he's going to be better for it. I think he's going to be better between Penei Sewell and Cade Mays than he was between Graham Glasgow and Taylor Decker last year. Like, there's so many things that are clearly be better removed from the broken leg that had him hobbling at the end of last season. I think Mahogany's prime for a bounce back, but I think the Lions did the right thing by bringing in capable, quality, experienced competition to push him for that job and to make sure he takes it to the level that he needs to win it.
Yeah, and you could say the same thing for Blake Miller with Larry Boren behind him. And look, the Lions definitely see Blake Miller as their week one starting offensive tackle. But there is a guy behind him who played really, really well there, at least in the Lions' eyes for the Dolphins last season, to the point that if Blake isn't the clear-cut guy come week one, like they could plug Boren in there. So yeah, Mahogany and Miller both really like have to be on it and show growth from the beginning of OTA, really the beginning of camp, and then once the pads come on. But there are challengers for those jobs that didn't exist last season, and that's a good thing for this team in the scope of putting the best five on the field week one through week 18.
First snap, 11 on 11. Who's at right tackle, Will?
Blake Miller.
See, I think it's going to be Borum. I don't know, but... I'm talking first snap Friday.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. No.
Not week one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's
it. No, I just, you know, the way that Brad talked about Blake the night they drafted him as like unequivocally a starting right tackle in year one made me think that like they're just gonna plug him in there right away and say swim. And if he starts to sink, then maybe that's when you move to Borm a little bit more frequently. But I think they're going to show every bit of belief and faith in Miller from the jump and hope that is just another way of sort of imbuing him with confidence. But, hey, maybe this is our dog and pony show pick of the week. Yeah. I'll take Blake Miller starting right tackle on Friday on the first snap of 11 on 11.
You can go back in history with the linemen they've drafted, right? They've handled them differently. Riley Reiff, Larry Warford had to work their way up. Penei Sewell, Taylor Decker were plugged right in. And so I don't know, there is like a little bit you can, you know, learn, I guess, about how the team feels about their projection for week one just based on kind of the day one snaps.
Yeah. Was Tate at center in the first snap of 11 on 11s last year?
I don't remember because it was a rookie minicamp and he wasn't for rookie minicamp. That throws me off a little bit. And I think maybe Glasgow was banged up or something there in OT. He banged up all year, but that was a fun experiment. Sure he loved it.
By the way, get that $1 off any beer. All you got to do, go to Dog and Pony Show where you mentioned Lions Collective. All right. You get the dollar. I mean, you get a dollar off beer. You can talk yourself into having a couple more beers. Obviously not driving, but you can talk yourself into having more beers. So shout out to Kyle, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. They're doing great stuff. My Dog and Pony Show Brewing pick of the week at left guard. I'll rock with Mahogany. I'm with you, Will. Boston College. I'll rock with Mahogany for the starter. You can comment down in the stream below your thoughts. Who starts at left guard? We'll be back next week. Everybody, go message Colton. Tell me. I hope he has a great vacation. I don't know what Colton's doing right now. He's having a blast out there. We'll catch him next week. But from us here on Lions Collective, we will see you then.